Episode number 5, Reefer Madness.
After Mark Dalton delivered his load of bottled water to a food service distributor in Winnipeg, he considered giving his ex-wife a call to find out how she was making out on her ride back to Toronto with Mick, the toothless truck driver. But as his thumb swept across the keypad of his cell phone in search of the on button, he imagined her screaming at him about how he'd left her all alone at the mercy of a grimy man with more fingers than teeth. That kind of abuse he could do without. Besides, after he called her, he'd have to speak to his dispatcher, Bud. And when it came right down to it, he had finite capacity for abuse. And if he was going to endure it, he might as well get it from Bud.
Yellow.
Hey, Bud. It's Mark.
Mark who?
Mark McGuire.
Sorry, pal. I don't know any Mark McGuire.
For crying out loud, Bud. It's me, Mark Dalton.
Oh, Mark Dalton. Hey, what's wrong with your cell phone?
Nothing. Why?
I've been getting calls from your ex-wife every half hour.
Yeah?
From what I can tell between the screaming, she's pretty pissed with you. Says a guy named Mick keeps giving her the creepy eye.
Huh. Well, sucks to be her, I guess.
Yeah. But what do you want?
Oh, how about, I don't know, a load?
Ah, the pickings are slim at the moment, my friend.
You must have something.
What do you know about reefers?
They're great icebreakers at parties.
I'm serious here.
Okay, I don't know anything about reefers.
I never stopped you from taking a special load before.
That's true.
Well, these guys seem desperate for drivers, and paying 30% over the usual fee for this sort of load.
Why are they being so generous? Does it have anything to do with mad cow disease?
I don't know.
30%? Still can't get drivers?
They said they needed dependable drivers they know can get the load to its destination no matter what. When I heard that, well, I naturally thought of you.
Naturally.
So you want to take the load or not?
Sure, why not?
Bud gave him the details. The company was named Better Beef and was based in Regina, Saskatchewan. He'd have to bobtail it there, then take on a chassis and reefer container filled with frozen beef, headed for Vancouver and ultimately Japan. Mark got off the phone and headed for Regina. After stopping for the night outside of Wolseley, Saskatchewan, Mark was able to easily make it into Regina for his 8 a.m. appointment at the Better Beef loading dock. As he made the turn off of Lawrence Street into the Better Beef yard, he noticed that directly across the street was a markedly newer operation called Best Beef. The building looked as if it had been recently constructed, and every truck and trailer in the yard was a late model, painted in gloss black with the Best Beef logo on it and the company name in bright yellow 10-foot-high letters down the side of the trailer. It was an impressive-looking operation, and their trucks had to be the envy of most of the drivers in the province. Looking at Best Beef, it was no wonder Better Beef was having trouble finding drivers. Best Beef had set up shop across the street to steal the business away from Better Beef by paying the best rates and offering the best benefit packages in the industry. It was a good strategy in the short term, but if Better Beef held on long enough, the new operation might stretch itself too thin to continue without filing for bankruptcy protection. Mark only hoped that if it was Better Beef that went under, they held on long enough for his paycheck to clear. It took 10 minutes to find the shipper's office, but when he did, the large man behind the desk named Voyek seemed thrilled to see him.
Are you the Mark Dalton?
Yeah, as far as I know, I'm the only one.
Good, good, come in.
You have a load for me?
Yes, I have a load. As many as you want.
Just one would be fine for today.
Voyek nodded.
One today, one next week, one next month.
Why are you having so much trouble getting drivers?
Well, driver is responsible for load. Well,
that's not different than a lot of other loads. Besides, you guys have insurance, right?
Of course.
So what's the problem?
A reefer load is different. It takes extra work from the driver, and how much work depends on the condition of the reefer container.
Mark looked out the window at the containers lined up in the yard. They weren't brand new like the reefers over at Best Beef, but they didn't look all that run down either. The oldest container in the yard couldn't be more than 5 years old.
You've got some pretty good equipment out there. Breakdowns shouldn't be a problem.
Not all drivers are like you, Mr. Dalton. They don't want to take chances on the load.
But the money you're paying is good, right?
There had to be a catch here, somewhere. Voyake outlined the company's pay rates, and they were just as Bud had explained to him over the phone.
Well, I guess I'll be taking a chance on a load.
Excellent!
Voyake led Mark out onto the loading dock, where workers were packing frozen meat into the rear of the reefer container backed up to the loading dock.
How much do you know about reefers?
I know they're fun at parties.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Voyake began explaining the setup and operation of the reefer container, from checking the oil to inspecting the belts, from the basic operation of the control system to the procedure for defrosting the coil. After a half-hour crash course in reefer operation, Mark's head was spinning. It all seemed straightforward enough, but there was a lot of information to assimilate at one time. He hoped he could remember it all, but a greater hope was that nothing would go wrong with the reefer on this trip.
Now, if unit shuts down completely...
Why would it shut down completely?
It shouldn't, but you never know.
Mark was dubious, but he supposed it was best to cover all the bases.
Okay.
If unit shuts down completely, this time of year you got about 2 hours, maybe three, before the outside heat starts to affect load.
What happens after 2 hours?
Then the outside of the load could start defrost and you get damage.
Mark nodded.
That happens, you call me and I send a man to fix it.
Woyake handed Mark his business card.
But it's a pretty new reefer unit, right? It should be fine.
Yes, should be fine.
Minutes later, they finished loading up the reefer. The temperature was set at minus 40. The seal was put on the container, and Mark was given all the papers he would need to connect with the yard manager on the docks in Vancouver. By 11 that morning, he was back on the road, confident that everything would be fine. After all, the reefer was humming away behind him like a long hauler, the load was frozen solid, and it was an easy run into the port of Vancouver. What could go wrong? But as he ran Motherload up through the gears, he noticed a long black Best Beef truck pulling onto the highway behind him.
Huh. Wonder if he's headed to the coast too.
By the middle of the afternoon, Mark had reached Swift Current, Saskatchewan, home of junior hockey's Broncos. After missing out on lunch, Mark's stomach was telling him that it might be a good time to stop for a bite to eat. So he pulled off the Trans-Canada into the first greasy spoon he saw that had a lot big enough for trucks. After shutting down Motherload, Mark did an inspection of the reefer, checking the inside temperature against the set point, which were within a half a degree of each other, and the amount of fuel in the reefer tank, just over 3/4 full. When he was sure everything was running fine, he headed off to the restaurant for lunch. Mark ordered a chicken sandwich and fries and washed it all down with a hot cup of coffee. But instead of heading back to his truck right away, Mark hung around the restaurant, waiting to see if he might need a visit to the bathroom before getting back into his truck for 6 more hours. Turns out he did, and when he emerged from the bathroom 10 minutes later, he felt lighter, refreshed, and ready to hit the road. As he exited the restaurant, Mark could hear his reefer unit humming from across the parking lot. The diesel engine on the chassis was running smoothly and everything seemed to be fine. Until he got a little closer. While the diesel engine was still going, all of the temperature controls were off.
How could that be?
Mark glanced at his watch and figured he hadn't been in the restaurant for more than 30 minutes. Of course, something could go wrong with a computerized control system in a matter of seconds. But something told Mark that this wasn't a simple mechanical or computer error. A quick inspection of the controls proved him right. The controls were off because they'd been turned off. Mark didn't understand. He'd heard of drivers switching off other drivers' reefer diesels at night to cut out the noise so they could get some sleep. But why would someone want to shut off the controls?
What the hell's the benefit of that?
Mark didn't have an answer. So instead of dwelling on the matter, Mark simply turned the controls back on and dialed the set point in at minus 40. The interior temperature read minus 32, which meant the load was still frozen solid, but had lost 8 full degrees in half an hour. That change in temperature had happened a lot faster than Voyake had told him it would, which meant that in the event of a shutdown, Mark would have more like an hour and a half before the load began to spoil. That was good to know, especially since Mark had a feeling there might be more things going wrong with the reefer on this trip. He watched the interior temperature gauge slowly begin to count down to minus 40. and when he was sure it was going to reach the set point, he decided to head back onto the highway. He climbed up into the driver's seat of Motherlode.
Just my luck.
Or was it? In the lower left corner of his outside mirror, Mark noticed a long black rig parked off in the opposite corner of the lot. The big yellow Best Beef letters on the side of the trailer were unmistakable.
Wonder if he's having as much trouble with his equipment as I am. Maybe I'll ask him if I see him.
A few moments later, after making himself comfortable, Mark put Motherlode into gear and headed for the highway. Behind him, the Best Beef rig got back onto the highway as well. Mark reached the outskirts of Calgary by dark. Usually, whenever he drove through Alberta, he made sure to stop at a steakhouse for an inch-thick T-bone. But his experience at lunch made him wary of an extended meal away from the truck. Instead, he opted for a cup of coffee and an apple fritter, saving any full meal he might have for the morning and daylight. The lot at the truck stop was big, easily accommodating 100 trucks or more. But as much room as there was, Mark wasn't about to take any chances. He drove to the farthest corner of the lot and parked his rig next to a stand of trees. That way, he'd be far enough away not to bother anyone, and the nearby trees would act as a sound cushion, absorbing some of the noise before it could bounce back and make its way across the lot, disturbing all the sleeping drivers. When he had Motherlode in just the right spot, Mark inspected the reefer to make sure everything was running smoothly. He still had more than a half a tank of fuel for the reefer, but the interior temperature was off by 2 degrees at minus 38. It wasn't much of a difference, but because the night was going to be a warm one, he decided to defrost the coil so the refrigeration unit could work at peak efficiency through the night. The coil took less than 20 minutes to defrost, and when he switched the unit back on, it immediately began working to get the interior temperature down to the set point of minus 40.
Now we're talking.
In the morning, he'd order a breakfast to go, top up all his fuel tanks, and he'd be back on the road along with the sun. Mark awoke to the sound of silence. Not silence exactly, but silence accentuated by the peaceful sounds of birds chirping and the distant noises coming from vehicles rolling down the highway across the lot and on the other side of the truck stop.
Oh, man, it sure is peaceful. Nice and quiet. Wait, quiet? Oh, shit!
Mark scrambled out of his sleeper and nearly tumbled out of his truck in a rush to get outside. A quick check of the trailer revealed that the reefer unit wasn't on. Neither the controls nor the generator. Nothing. It was as if it had all been shut down, especially since there was more than enough fuel left in the tank for continued operation. Mark took a look around and saw that the lot had filled up during the night, and there was a box trailer pulled by a Kenworth parked right next to him, not more than 10 feet away. Obviously, the driver of that rig had shut down the unit last night so the noise from the thing wouldn't disturb his sleep. Mark went over to the truck.
Come on out of there, you son of a bitch! I know you're in there, and I know what you did, too!
Slowly, the Kenworth began to rock back and forth, and seconds later, there was someone looking down out of the cab at Mark.
You shut off my reefer!
The man slowly got out of the truck, his movements hampered by the veil of sleep that still hung over him.
Did you, you bastard?
The man turned to face Mark, and Mark knew he could have been a bit more cautious in his dealings with unknown truckers. The man had to be 6'5", 250 pounds. He wore a tank top that showed off the tattoos down the length of each of his arms. His hair was cropped short on top, but was long in the back with one of the worst mullets Mark had ever seen. There were rings in and around both of his ears and on each of his hands, and his boots were tipped with what looked to be chrome steel spikes. The buckle on his belt suggested the man's name was Vernon.
What's your problem, man?
Vernon stepped forward and cast a shadow upon Mark.
My reefer, it's off.
I know. I parked here around 3 a.m, hoping the sound of the engine would help me sleep. It did for a while, but I woke up when you shut it off around 5.
I didn't shut it off.
Well, somebody did.
And that somebody wasn't you?
Vernon just looked at him.
Well, thanks.
I sit on it and twirl, Barbara.
Vernon sneered at Mark, then climbed back into his truck. Mark looked around for another possible suspect and considered banging on the door of another truck, but he didn't want to push his luck. Besides, it didn't matter who had shut him down. What mattered now was starting it up again and getting the temperature back to the set point. Mark went through the steps just like he'd done before, and the reefer unit responded perfectly.
Nothing wrong with the unit.
And luckily, the interior temperature wasn't off by more than 10 degrees. Another disaster averted. Mark headed for the restaurant, wondering why, if he had to be so lucky, all that luck had to be bad. The restaurant was just about like every other greasy spoon he'd ever eaten in, offering a breakfast special of 2 eggs, bacon or sausage, hash browns, and a coffee for less than $5. Mark ordered sausages, scrambled eggs, and asked that the hash browns be replaced by toast, on account of his heart was only being able to handle so much grease at one sitting. Mark found an empty table by a window and turned the chairs around so he could watch his truck while he ate, just in case. Breakfast arrived a few minutes later, and Mark dug into what was a fairly tasty breakfast as far as roadside fare is concerned. After finishing off his eggs, Mark started in on the sausages. Before he had his first bite, an old-timer came up beside him and smiled at him with a sort of goofy grin.
Can I help you?
The old man, wearing a Rough Riders ball cap and a t-shirt from some wheat collective, just smiled at him.
You're driving for Better Beef, eh?
Yeah.
You crazy or stupid?
Mark pulled back slightly at that, looking the man square in the eyes. What the hell kind of question was that, he wondered. But the longer he looked at the man, the more the man kept smiling. Obviously, the question wasn't meant to be an insult, but perhaps a good-natured jab. Mark decided to humor the man.
A bit of both, I guess.
Yeah, you'd have to be a bit of both to drive for them guys.
Why? What's wrong with Better Beef?
With Better Beef? Nothing. It's them other ones you gotta worry about.
Mark was having trouble following the old man, like he was talking in riddles. The old-timer looked like he was about to be on his way, but there was a lot Mark wanted to know before he let the guy slip through his fingers.
Hey, you hungry? I'd be happy to buy you breakfast if I could ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
Have a seat then. And tell me what you know about Better Beef.
The old man slid into the seat across from Mark, still allowing Mark a partial view of his truck over the guy's shoulder. Mark quickly ordered another breakfast, and the old man began eating without missing a beat.
Better Beef's a good company. An excellent company. Been around for ages, and their meat's some of the best you'd ever want to eat. But they're having a real old-fashioned range war with Best Beef. Now, Best opened a shop across the road from Better about a year ago. They've got all kinds of money, but their product ain't so good. So, instead of working to make themselves better, they've been trying to make Better Beef worse.
So the two companies are having a big fight, huh?
And this ain't no Pepsi Challenge kind of war either. This one's a knockdown, drag 'em out kind of brawl.
Mark was silent, wondering just what he'd gotten himself into.
You have trouble with your reefer?
Yeah.
And it's a spanking brand new one, too, right?
Yeah.
And you probably had a Best Beef truck following you west all the way from Regina. That right?
Yeah. But how'd you know?
How do you think? I was hauling a load for them, about 3 months ago. New reefer. Great pay. Everything perfect about the whole deal. Except by the time I'd reached the coast, I'd had so many problems that half the load got turned back for hamburger meat and dog food.
So all of the stuff that's been happening to me...
has happened to just about every other poor slob who's been crazy or stupid enough to take a load from Better Beef.
But that means...
sabotage.
You've gotta be kidding.
Nope. Let's just say that Best Beef doesn't exactly do much of a background check on their drivers. In fact, a criminal record is probably a bonus as far as they're concerned.
Mark could feel his hair start to bristle down the back of his neck at the thought of some thug using him and Motherlode to put a legitimate company out of business. What made it even worse was that there were good-paying loads just waiting there for truckers to pick them up and haul them away. But they were turning them all down out of fear over what somebody might do to them, their truck, and their livelihood.
Oh, damn it.
Drivers had enough trouble making a decent living these days without worrying about their next load possibly being their last.
Well, that would explain it then.
Been having trouble?
Yeah, the whole way.
And you still ain't there yet.
No. There's still a long way to go. Well, I better be going.
Thanks for the meal. But, just don't do anything stupid.
Mark looked at the man, wondering if he knew what Mark was like, and had heard of some of the crazy stunts he'd pulled in the past.
This little feud ain't worth your life.
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind.
Mark exited the restaurant and returned to Motherlode. When he was halfway across the parking lot, he realized things were too quiet.
Oh, God damn it!
After just a few steps, Mark realized that the Reaper once again stopped running.
What now?
A quick check of the unit revealed that the fuel tank was empty. That, of course, was impossible, since there had been plenty of fuel in the tank before he'd gone inside, and even a quarter of tank would have lasted 4 to 6 hours, maybe even more. Obviously, someone had drained the fuel tank on purpose. Mark was about to ask himself who might do such a thing, but now it was obvious. The driver of the best beef truck had been shadowing him since Regina, and had sabotaged his reefer at every stop. But how could he have done it so quickly without punching a hole in the tank? Obviously, the people at Best Beef had trained their drivers in guerrilla tactics, and no amount of inspection, precaution, or care was going to stop them from making life difficult for Better Beef drivers. No wonder they can't get anyone to haul for them. Who needs the hassle? Most drivers would just move on to the next company instead of putting up with that sort of crap. Then again, some drivers enjoyed a challenge. Some drivers felt right at home in a good old-fashioned range war. Some drivers you just don't mess around with. Drivers like Mark Dalton, owner-operator.
All right, let's dance, you cheap low-life bastard. I'm gonna stop you one way or another.
Now that he knew the score, Mark had an idea or two about how to stop Best Beef from getting the better of him and the company he was hauling for. Mark could have gone further, but he decided to stop in Kamloops well before sundown to give himself enough time to make sure he had everything he needed and everything in place. Years ago, before Mark bought Motherlode and headed out onto the open road, he'd worked as a private detective specializing in divorce cases. The money had been pretty good, but the job entailed a lot of nights and weekends videotaping wives and husbands through motel windows so the tapes could later be used in court as evidence, or as leverage for a better settlement. Most of the time, it was a simple matter of setting up a camera, making sure he got a few clear images of the party in question, and then packing up and collecting a check. Then one night, the last he ever worked as a private detective, Mark was following the wife of his bank manager. But instead of learning that the bank manager's wife was meeting with some young stud, he discovered that the person in bed with the woman was none other than Mark's own wife, Jenny. That was enough of the detective business for him. After that night, he knew he'd never be able to videotape another cheating spouse as long as he lived. So he quit the business and got a divorce. Then he sold almost everything he had and bought his beloved Motherlode, the only woman in his life who had yet to let him down. There were a few things Mark hung on to, like his set of 1972 hockey cards, his ceramic Batman piggy bank, and his Sony Digital Handycam. It was an excellent tool for private detectives because it was small, lightweight, and had a night shot feature which made it possible to record images in the dark. The cameras could also be hooked up to sensors, which turned on the recorder only when there was something moving in the frame. That little feature and info-lithium batteries that lasted over 4 hours each made the Handycam an invaluable tool for catching someone in the act. Someone like a Best Beef driver vandalizing a Better Beef truck. Mark scouted the truck stop parking lot for the best location and decided on a spot directly behind the fuel station that had everything he needed. To the right was some bushes and a stand of trees where he could set up the camera and tripod without them being seen from the lot. In addition, there was a huge overhead light sitting atop a pole about 50 feet over the truck. Although he could tape in darkness, it was always better to have some light to record by. In the dark, smart lawyers argued that it wasn't their client on the tape, while light removed all shadow of a doubt. Mark set up the camera at dusk, trying to spend as little time in the bushes to avoid suspicion. When a driver did walk by, Mark took a step back from the bushes and pretended to be relieving himself against a tree. When the man was gone, Mark finished setting up the camera, making sure to get all of his rig in the frame. When he was satisfied that he was set up as well as possible under the circumstances, he stepped out from the bushes and pretended to be zipping up his pants, just in case someone had been watching him and wondered what the hell he'd been doing. After that, it was just a matter of waiting for the sun to go down. He headed into the restaurant for a coffee and picked up a copy of the Kamloops Daily News. When he'd finished his second cup of coffee, he was done reading the paper. The sun had fully set behind the mountains to the west. That meant it was time for Mark to take a little tour of the parking lot. As he expected, the big black Best Beef trailer was parked at the opposite end of the lot, tucked in behind a row of tankers. Mark didn't know if the driver was in the cab or not, but it really didn't matter. In fact, it would suit Mark's purposes even better if the driver was in his truck and knew Mark was checking him out. Mark walked around the Best Beef rig twice, taking his time and looking for something he could do as sort of payback for all the grief he'd been given since leaving Regina. He could switch off his reefer, change the set point, maybe even let the air out of his tires. But all of those things could be easily fixed. Mark needed something better, something that would cause the driver some real trouble. He checked the seal on the back of the trailer and saw that it was the thin metal band type that clicked into place and rusted over on trips across the ocean. This type of seal was a lot easier to break than the ceramic button type Better Beef used on their trucks. Button types required a pair of bulk cutters, and drivers didn't usually carry those with them on their runs. Of course, the Best Beef driver just might have bulk cutters in his truck, but Mark was willing to bet he didn't. After a quick look left and right, Mark took out his pocket knife and set about cutting the seal on the Best Beef rig. It took some time, but eventually he was able to hack through the metal and pull the seal from the trailer. His pocket knife was ruined, but thinking of the damage he'd done, the cost of the knife was a small price to pay. First of all, without the proper seal, the load could be turned back by the customer, and that would hurt Best Beef in the pocketbook, right where they'd feel it most. And secondly, a missing seal would probably infuriate the Best Beef driver and provoke him into doing something extreme in retaliation. And that was exactly what Mark wanted. So Mark returned to Motherlode and noted that the reefer unit was running perfectly. Then he climbed into the cab and stretched out in his sleeper, looking forward to a good night's sleep. He was not disappointed. Mark awoke the next morning to utter silence. His plan seemed to have worked, but he had to be sure. He climbed out of his truck and made a quick inspection of the trailer. The seals on the doors were still intact, but the unit had shut down because of all of its oil lines had been cut at some point during the night. He ran into the bushes and checked the tape made during the night. There were various shots of people walking past on their way to the restaurant, and then an extended segment in which a man in black, wearing a Best Beef t-shirt no less, climbed all over his rig, working furiously on the hoses connected to the reefer. The images were so good that Mark could even see the oil spurt and spray as he cut the lines that were under pressure. Mark's grin was from ear to ear. Hopefully, the guy's got a change of clothes with him, he thought, as he packed up the camera and loaded it into his truck. When he was all ready to leave, Mark pulled out of the lot without breakfast. On the way to Vancouver, Mark was on his cell phone constantly, first calling Voyeg, then asking directory assistance for numbers in both the city of Vancouver and the surrounding suburbs. It would take a couple of hours for Voyeg to send a repairman to service the reefer, and it had probably been 2 or 3 hours since the unit had shut down. That meant that Mark needed to keep the entire thing cool until it was up and running again. And the best way to do that was to put the reefer inside another refrigerated container. Luckily for Mark, all of this was happening during the day, when most community arenas were unoccupied and available for rent. When he arrived at the Newton Arena in Surrey, the arena attendant was waiting outside for him.
Hey, you the guy wanting to rent the rink?
Yes, is it still available?
That's $100 an hour.
Mark didn't like the sound of that at all, but he hoped that when he explained the whole story to Wojak, Better Beef would help him with the cost.
$100 is fine.
You got skates?
No. Actually, could you open the big doors at the end of the rink for me, please?
The attendant scratched his head, but after a shrug, he opened the doors for Mark. Mark drove into the arena and parked Motherlode at center ice, where the temperature at ice level was near freezing. It wasn't cold enough to chill the reefer by many degrees, but at least this way, the air creeping into it would be cold, and the deterioration rate of the load, if any, would be reduced. Not a foolproof plan by any means, but the best Mark could come up with on the fly.
You gonna leave that truck there for very long?
Mark explained to the attendant what was going on. Then, when he was done, he asked the man to call him a cab and take him to the Surrey RCMP detachment.
Sure thing!
Mark finally reached the docks by mid-afternoon, the temperature and the set point on his reefer matching perfectly. At the entrance to the yard, Mark saw the Best Beef truck parked by the side of the road, the driver talking heatedly to a couple of constables from the RCMP. The officers waved back at him, one of them holding Mark's tape in his hand. The Best Beef driver waved as well, but his wave consisted of just a single finger.
Serves you right, you dirty bastard.
Episode number 6, Lost and Found.
After dropping off his reefer of frozen beef in Vancouver, Mark called his dispatcher, Bud, for a new load. He'd either called at just the right time, or Bud was in an especially good mood, because Mark was given a load coming out of the very same yard he was in, which fit on the standard 40-foot chassis he already had connected to Motherlode. Too good to be true? Of course it was. It took a 3-hour wait to get the container of imported Japanese auto parts loaded onto his chassis, and another 20 minutes for Mark to find his way out of the yard. But a few hours' wait wasn't too bad considering he'd be driving the load for the next 3 days. The trouble with extended waiting periods came when you were delivering containers at a flat rate or driving just an hour or two to make the delivery. But that was behind him now. He was out of the Trans-Canada with nothing but long hours and open road in front of him before he hit his destination in Winnipeg sometime on Wednesday afternoon. He decided to drive for 6 hours and sleep over outside Calgary. That would give him 2 more days driving, one to get halfway through Saskatchewan and another to reach Winnipeg, making his delivery with more than a half a day to spare. After a good night's rest on the outskirts of Calgary, Mark had a hearty breakfast of eggs and sausage while reading the morning edition of the Calgary Herald. The big story of the day was news of a child being taken from her family's campsite at Banff National Park. That made 3 children abducted in the last 2 weeks, one in Saskatchewan and now 2 in Alberta. Things didn't look good for the family, since the first 2 girls had both turned up dead in rural areas just off the Trans-Canada. Mark felt sick to his stomach and had trouble finishing his breakfast. It was a terrible thing to lose a child, but it had to be hell for the families knowing there was a very good chance the child would turn up dead. Mark took the picture of the girl with him and posted it inside the cab of Motherlode. Maybe he'd see her somewhere on the road. It was a long shot, but stranger things have happened, especially to him. Mark drove straight on through to Swift Current, where at 3 in the morning he was due for some sleep. But before he caught some Z's, Mark had a craving for a quarter pounder with cheese. Luckily for him, there was a McDonald's in Swift Current not very far from the highway. Within minutes of pulling off the Trans-Canada, Mark was in line, salivating at the smell of freshly grilled 100% Canadian beef. There were 4 people ahead of him in line, including a short, thin man with a bad comb over standing right in front of him. Normally, Mark wouldn't have noticed the guy, but he was constantly shifting from foot to foot while he waited, and he smelled as if he could have used a bath like yesterday. When the little man stepped up to the counter, he ordered a Big Mac combo and a Happy Meal. That was curious. Mark took a look around the restaurant and couldn't find a kid anywhere.
You must be hungry.
What?
I said you must be hungry. A Big Mac and a Happy Meal.
Oh. The Big Mac's for now. I'll have the other meal later. You know, snack for the road.
Oh, yeah? Where are you headed?
East.
Where east?
You wouldn't know it.
Hey, I've been driving for years. Try me.
A small town called Morden, Manitoba.
They got a terminal interchange there for the States or something.
A what?
The young girl serving them stepped up to the counter and put the little man's meal on the counter. The little man turned around and grabbed his two meals.
Safe travels to you. Goodbye.
The little man hurried out the door. It was Mark's turn to order.
Give me a quarter pounder with cheese meal and give me an extra hamburger too.
When he had his order, he took a seat by the window so he could look out over the parking lot. As he opened up his quarter pounder, he saw the little man walking across the lot carrying his Happy Meal in his hand. When he got to his truck, Mark was surprised and maybe a little disappointed to learn that the guy drove a Peterbilt 379 similar to Mark's. Only it wasn't in as good as condition as Motherlode. The name on the door of his truck read Power Trucking. Mark ate his burger as he watched the man drive off. Strange sort of guy. Nothing wrong with him to look at, but something about him had given Mark the creeps.
Just those old PI instincts kicking in, nothing to worry about.
He'd finished his quarter pounder and still felt a twitch of hunger in his belly. He opened up the hamburger and downed it in three bites. Then he took a sip of his drink. Mark was full, satisfied, and ready for bed. The next day went by without incident, and before Mark knew it, it was already dark. He was tired, and not looking forward to more endless stretches of asphalt that neither curved nor rose or fell. Just then, something darted onto the highway.
What the hell? Deer! Shit.
The buck's antlers had gotten tangled up in Mother Lode's grill. There was no steam rising up out of the engine compartment, so there was a good chance the light housing and fender had taken the brunt of the collision. There was steam rising up from the buck's limp and broken body. Blood leaked out of it in a dozen different places. A long crimson streak was painted across the highway behind the truck, and the right side of Mother Lode was coated in a dark red sheen.
Holy shit!
Mark climbed up into Mother Lode and brought out the axe he kept in the sleeper. Then he began the grisly task of hacking the buck free of Mother Lode.
Oh God, I hate this part.
His first swing of the axe was a little weak, barely breaking the animal's skin. He knew the thing was already dead, but there was something inside Mark that was telling him not to hurt it.
Yeah, probably should have thought about that before making it roadkill.
His next swing was more forceful, breaking the skin but doing little to cut through the big muscles in the deer's shoulder. A few times, the strength of his blows forced blood to spurt from the wound. He was hit by blood in the face, hands, and clothes, some of it even trickling down over his mouth. Mark felt as if he might throw up if he had to do this for much longer. But then a particularly hard blow caught the shoulder just right, slicing through the joint and freeing the leg from the shoulder.
Yeah.
He could never have imagined that dismembering a deer could be such hard work. His clothes were soaked, his muscles ached, and he felt as if he'd just run a marathon. Mark took a moment to assess the damage. The truck would need a new grill and fender and maybe a new radiator. The bumper was bent, but depending on how much it would be to replace, he might be able to get away with having it straightened and painted, maybe even re-chromed.
Damn. Okay, it could have been worse.
It was late, and Mark was bushed. He needed a few hours' sleep before heading back out on the road. especially since he needed some time to unwind after killing the deer and hacking its body into pieces. So he climbed up into Motherlode, laid down on the bed in the sleeper, and drifted off to sleep. Mark awoke after a few hours, rested but hungry. He headed off down the highway, prepared to stop at the first greasy spoon he found. It only took 10 minutes before a mom-and-pop diner appeared by the side of the highway. Mark vaguely remembered eating there before, and the food being okay. It was called Looker's now, but it had probably operated under another name the time he'd been there before. The moment Mark stepped into the restaurant, there were dozens of eyes upon him.
Maybe that's why they called this place Looker's. Everyone's looking at me.
And the look on the face of the girl behind the counter had been something else as well. Like she had seen a ghost or a monster. Mark picked up the tray with his burger, fries, and coffee and headed for a secluded corner of the restaurant. He'd hoped that people might forget about him there, but he could still feel their eyes on him, following him across the room as if they expected him to do something weird. He crept into the booth farthest from the counter and started eating. The feeling of eyes on him made him nervous, so he hunched up his shoulders, trying to make himself smaller and less conspicuous. He looked around for a newspaper and saw one on the table next to him. He grabbed it. It was a day-old copy of the Regina Leader Post, but it would do the job. He folded the paper so he could hold it with one hand, and then raised it up to eye level so that people around him couldn't stare at him anymore.
Maybe now I can eat in peace.
He took a bite of his burger, washed it down with some coffee, then picked up a French fry and dragged it through the pool of ketchup he'd squirted onto one side of his plate. The fry was cold and a bit undercooked, but it was tasty enough.
Put down the paper slowly.
Mark didn't bother to look up.
What?
I said put it down slowly and keep your other hand where I can see it.
Slowly, just as he'd been instructed, Mark lowered the paper. Directly across from him was a large man dressed for the most part in black, pointing the biggest gun Mark had ever seen directly at his forehead.
Hey, what is it?
Put your hands down on the table and slide out of the booth.
What's going on?
Listen, asshole. Killing you would be a waste of a good bullet. But if you don't start doing everything I say, I'll put one in your brain. To hell with the cost.
Hey, what's going on?
Why are you all covered in blood?
Oh.
There's something funny.
Yeah, there is.
What are you laughing at?
Nothing, officer.
I hope they're too tight, you sick bastard!
Mark was lifted roughly to his feet and searched. His pockets were emptied, and he was led out of the now empty restaurant. Outside, restaurant staff and patrons were all watching him, along with people who had taken time out from filling their cars and trucks with fuel to see what the hell was going on. Mark was put into the back of a RCMP cruiser.
Can you tell me what I did wrong?
Minutes later, a sergeant, judging by the stripes on the arms of his jacket, opened the car door and poked his head inside.
How you doing?
Am I under arrest?
Yeah.
What did I do?
We're not sure yet.
Then why am I under arrest?
So we could detain you while we conduct an investigation.
Can you do that?
Yes.
All right, then why am I being detained?
Why are you covered in blood?
Because I hit a deer about 15 kilometers back, and I had to cut it free of my rig with an axe. You can send one of your men to check out the deer, but my rig still has antler bits in the grill if you want to save yourself some time.
Yeah, which truck is yours?
It's the Pete 379 over there in the corner of the lot.
The sergeant headed off towards Motherlode. Minutes later, he returned and opened the door.
Sorry, Mr. Dalton. Here, let me help you out of the car.
The sergeant reached in and grabbed Mark's arm. After Mark put a foot on the ground, there were other hands on him, this time easing him up onto his feet. Someone was unlocking the handcuffs.
Well? See, we're looking for a man, possibly a trucker, that's suspected of kidnapping a little girl in Banff.
I read about that in the paper a couple of days ago.
Yeah, we had information the man might be traveling east. The time to get from Banff to here is about right, and you did have blood all over you.
To tell you the truth, after cutting the deer free, I was so tired I fell asleep and forgot all about the blood.
Yeah, well, the way we figured it, you were either our guy or someone who'd been involved in a bar fight at a roadhouse a few clicks up the road.
Negative on both counts.
Still, you are covered in blood.
Well, you got me there. I should have cleaned up before heading into the restaurant.
And you should have called us to let us know about the deer.
I was going to, but forgot to do that too.
Yeah, well, sorry to have interrupted your meal.
Oh yeah, these things happen.
The sergeant handed Mark his wallet and the other things they had taken from his pockets.
Hey, I suggest you clean up before heading back into the restaurant. Or better yet, maybe hit the road and stop at another stop up the highway.
Yeah, I'll do that.
The sergeant tipped his hat and turned to walk away. But there was more Mark wanted to know.
Excuse me, officer. This guy you're looking for, what else do you know about him?
I really can't tell you any more than I have already.
But I'm driving the same route and direction you think this guy is traveling. Wouldn't hurt to have an extra set of eyes out there on the road, right?
Well, true.
Your boys were pretty rough on me. Hate to have to file a complaint against one of them.
All right. We're pretty sure it's the same guy who's taken all three girls. We found the bodies of the first two girls just outside of small towns off the highway, always thousands of kilometers from where they were picked up. It seems like he likes to keep them alive a few days before he kills them.
Oh, well, thanks. I hope you catch him.
Yeah.
As Mark worked his way up through the gears, his mind began to wonder how and why the police would think that he might be a child abductor. Sure, he'd been covered in blood, but someone who'd avoided capture by the police for this long would never be so careless as to drive around in public covered in blood. Those kinds of killers were always successful because they were quiet, shy, and reserved. They lived life below the radar, and people were rarely suspicious of them, especially the police. Whenever they caught one of these guys, didn't their friends and neighbors always say the same thing about him? He was such a nice guy, kept to himself and never bothered anybody. He was a good neighbor, never had any trouble with him.
Oh, yeah, nice guy, except for those half dozen people he killed without anyone ever noticing he was a goddamn psychopath.
These killers always looked harmless and were maybe even a bit goofy in the way they interacted with the rest of the world.
Like that guy in the McDonald's back in Swift Current.
Now there was a guy who fit the bill. Suddenly, Mark's blood ran cold as something deep down in the pit of his stomach told him he was onto something. The guy had bought a Happy Meal even though it was late and there was no kid in sight. And there were plenty of other places to eat, even other McDonald's further up the highway. He drove a dark Peterbilt 379 just like Mark did, which might have been one of the reasons the police had suspected Mark. And the guy was genuinely creepy, so much so that it didn't take much of an imagination to picture this guy doing something weird, maybe even violent.
Now, where did he say he was going? Morden. Isn't that strange? Morden sounds a little like morbid or mort, which is another word for death.
Suddenly, Mark was sure. He pulled over onto the side of the highway to check the map. Morden was a small town south of Winnipeg, well off the Trans-Canada. Just the sort of place the police said he liked to dump bodies. Mark grabbed his cell phone and called the RCMP. He wanted to speak to the sergeant he just talked to, but he couldn't remember the man's name. He was passed along to another sergeant, this one driving a desk inside a detachment.
I think I know who abducted that girl in Banff.
Oh, do you now?
He's driving east. She's still alive, but she won't be for long. I think he's headed for a town called Morden.
How do you know that?
He told me.
So you know him?
Well, yeah, I met him.
What's his name?
I don't know.
Is this a crank? Because we don't have time for cranks.
It was obvious to Mark what needed to be done. He had to get to Morden as fast as he could. So when the killer arrived, Mark would be there waiting for him. Mark drove straight on through the night, constantly keeping his speed 20 kilometers over the limit, and sometimes more when he could get away with it. All the while, he kept his eyes peeled for a dark Pete 379 with the words Power Trucking on the side of it. But for all his efforts, Mark was unable to spot anything even closely resembling the rig he'd seen in Swift Current. It was possible, of course, that the guy had just been giving Mark a line about heading to Morden. After all, Why would a killer tell someone, anyone, his plans? Especially if he had killed two people and knew police across the country were looking for him.
Because the bastard's crazy, that's why. Christ, I should have done something when I had a chance.
Mark reached Morden around 6 in the evening without spotting the guy's rig. Mark had turned south at Brandon, but there were a half dozen different ways of getting down from the Trans-Canada. It was entirely possible that Mark had made it to Morden before him. He drove through the small town of a few thousand souls once, garnering stares from the locals every inch of the way, then doubled back to the west end of the town to park Motherlode in an inconspicuous spot by the side of the road. And then he waited. It had been exciting driving fast and hurrying along in order to get to Morden in time, but now time seemed to stand still for Mark. Since there was really only one decent road that headed into Morden, it wouldn't be that hard to spot the guy as he drove into town. But staying awake to see it happen was another matter entirely. Mark had been driving hard for a full day and the kilometers were starting to catch up with him. Once, he drifted off and dreamt about being asleep as the killer drove past, but was abruptly awakened from the dream by the sound of the Cummins engine braking as it slowed on the approach to town. Mark glanced at his watch. 2:30 in the morning.
Well, if there was ever a time to sneak into Morden and drop a body onto the side of the road.
Then, almost as if on cue, two pinprick points of light appeared in Mark's driver's side rearview mirror. Mark's pulse quickened. And then as the rig drove by, Mark saw the words Power Trucking written on the door.
Ah, bingo!
Mark started his rig, but waited until the killer was far enough ahead that he wouldn't notice Mark pulling out onto the highway. As an extra precaution, Mark also refrained from switching on his running lights until a curve or rise in the road obscured him from the killer's view. As they headed into Morden, Mark experienced a moment of doubt where he wondered if the guy actually had a delivery to make in town. But they drove on through Morden as if the town wasn't even there. And that's when Mark was sure he was right. The game of cat and mouse continued for several more kilometers until they reached a truck stop near the southbound highway that led into the United States and hooked up with Interstate 29 south of the border. Obviously, the guy planned to fuel up, get a bite to eat, then drop the girl's body off somewhere between here and the border, then cross the border and be hours into the States before the body had even been discovered. Mark hung well back at the very edges of the truck stop's parking lot. Fortunately, the lot was well lit, and Mark was able to watch the guy exit his truck and walk across the lot toward the restaurant.
That's him. But he won't be buying a Happy Meal this time round.
When the guy had been inside the restaurant for a few minutes, Mark pulled closer to the man's rig. It was black, which seemed appropriate for a child killer, but other than the color, there was nothing particularly ominous about the truck. Mark decided to check it out. He left Motherlode running and took the long way around the back of his trailer so he wouldn't be seen from inside the restaurant. He approached the Black Pete 379 from the rear, listening intently to see if he could hear any sound coming from inside.
What the hell?
That was all Mark needed to hear. He turned toward Motherlode, knowing he could easily break a window with his axe and get inside to the girl. The whole thing would take less than 30 seconds, except the guy had exited the restaurant and was running toward Mark.
Hey! What the hell do you think you're doing? Leave my truck alone!
I know she's in there! I'm getting her out!
That's when the guy reached into his jacket and pulled out a small handgun, most likely a .22 judging by the size of it.
Oh, shit!
Only an idiot brought an axe to a gunfight. But besides a Louisville Slugger under his seat, Mark didn't have a cachet of weapons to defend himself with. Except Motherlode. What was a single brass bullet against tons of rolling steel? Mark climbed up into Motherlode, threw her in gear, and popped the clutch. The big Pete leaped forward, stopping the killer in his tracks. For a moment, there was real fear on the man's face as he realized his .22 was going to have little stopping power against a .379. Still, he leveled the gun at Mark. Mark kept on rolling. The man turned and started to run, but instead of running him down, Mark turned the wheel sharply right and drove the right front corner of Motherlode into the killer's rig. Mark turned off Motherlode, ran around to the passenger side of the other rig, and smashed in the window with his axe. Mark felt his heart leap into his throat. If the girl was crying, she was alive. For the second time in as many days, Mark was having a long conversation with a policeman. This time, however, the tone of the talk was much more pleasant.
Wow! So, how did you know he was the guy?
He just rubbed me the wrong way. And then when the cops told me what they were looking for when they nabbed me in Saskatchewan, I don't know, everything sort of clicked.
Well, you'll be happy to know we caught up with him just before the border.
And the girl?
She's messed up, as you'd expect. But physically, she's gonna be fine. And you'll be happy to know that you're being recommended for a civilian citation.
Thanks.
Mark wasn't sure what a civilian citation was, but it sounded like something he could mention to police if he was ever arrested again. Still, there was something a bit more practical the police could do for him right now. The collision with the guy's truck had left the front of Motherlode a wreck, with damage likely up in the $10,000 range. Sure, he could put in an insurance claim, but his premiums would be sure to go up the following year.
Yeah, the citation thing would be nice, but I'm wondering if there's something you could do for me today.
Well, if I'm able.
In your report, do you think you could say that he hit me with his truck instead of the other way around?
That way, Mark could put a claim in to the other guy's insurance. After all, what did he care if his insurance premiums went up a couple hundred percent next year? That guy wouldn't be driving again for a long, long time. The officer rubbed his chin and thought about it.
Sure. I think I could word it that way.
Appreciate it.
Mark suddenly felt less like a sucker and more like a hero with each passing moment.
Episode number 7, No Good Deed Goes Unpunished.
Motherlode was running as well as it ever had, but it hadn't looked so good in years. Probably since he'd first driven it off the lot more than 10 years ago. After his run-in with a deer in southern Manitoba, the right front fender and much of his front grille had been bashed in. He'd thought about driving it all the way into Toronto so his regular mechanic could fix it, but he'd heard good things about a shop outside of Winnipeg and decided to give them a try. They did the work in a couple of days and had done a great job straightening everything out, matching paint, and polishing the rest of the truck so the new paint wouldn't be that obvious compared to the old. Although he loved his rig and he'd been through all sorts of adventures with Motherlode, she was getting a bit long in the tooth. With the advances that had been made in truck design and engine development, he could probably be driving some computer-monitored wonder machine that would be more fuel-efficient, more comfortable to drive, and safer than what he had now. Mark loved his truck, and there were still plenty of miles, not to mention adventures, still left in her. But that also meant that it might be a good time to sell. Obviously, it was a big decision, and one he'd have to think about over the next few weeks. Mark was traveling east along Highway 11. He'd chosen that route because it was flatter and safer than the shorter but much more twisted Highway 17. This was a big event for the theater troupe, and Mark didn't want to take any chances with their livelihood. The drive was pretty uneventful until he passed through Moonbeam, a small town on the highway between Kapuskasing and Smooth Rock Falls. Up ahead in the road, Mark saw some commotion on the right-hand shoulder. He slowed his rig to get a better look and saw a car pulled over onto the side of the road, parked at a funny angle, as if it had been stopped in a hurry, and a man and a woman arguing outside of the car. The woman, blonde and dressed in jeans and a fitted jacket, appeared as if she wanted to get away, but the man wouldn't let her. He pulled on her jacket, yanking her backwards, then poked a finger hard into her shoulder. Mark couldn't let that pass. It didn't matter what they were arguing about. There was no way a guy should be pushing a woman around like that. He pulled over and came to a stop behind the car and got out of his truck.
What's going on? You all right, ma'am?
Hey, get lost, buddy!
He wore a grimy black ball cap, his denim jacket was faded and dirty, his jeans torn at the knees, and his boots had once been black, but they were now scuffed and gray.
Get back in your truck and mind your own goddamn business!
Mark wished he could mind his own business, but he couldn't.
I'm not leaving until I'm sure she's gonna be all right.
She's fine! Now get the hell out of here!
Mark glanced over at the girl, and she was shaking her head.
Would you like to come with me, miss?
She ain't going nowhere! And you're either going away or going down, you nosy son of a bitch!
With this threat, the situation suddenly got more intense. Mark took out his cell phone and dialed 911. Nothing happened.
What the hell?
Mark realized that his phone was out of power, dead.
What's the matter, buddy? Forget to pay your bill?
Mark held the phone up to his ear.
Yes, I'd like to report an assault on a young girl.
As long as Mark acted like the phone was working, the guy might believe that he had called the cops. The ploy worked for about 5 seconds.
Nice try, asshole!
The guy shoved Mark hard. It sent him reeling backwards. He managed to stay on his feet, but only because he'd backed all the way up to Motherlode and was now leaning against her front grill. A truck passed by then, heading east. It didn't slow and honk its horn, and Mark wondered if the driver had even noticed that something wasn't right with this little scene at the side of the road.
You should have been smart like that guy. Stayed in your truck and kept right on going. Instead, you want to be a hero? Sticking your nose in other people's business? Well, now I'm gonna break that nose of yours and a few other bones while I'm at it.
And just then, the girl started to run. Not down the road, but out into the middle of it.
Stop it, both of you!
She was hit squarely by the front end of the car and was sent airborne, flying over the hood, then striking the windshield before rolling off the roof of the car onto the pavement. For a moment, everything was still and quiet, as everyone there on the side of the road looked at the girl for any sign of movement. The girl moved one of her legs slightly, and then lay very, very still. 5 guys, obviously friends of Mark's assailant, piled out of the car.
See what you did? Now we're going to have to make you pay.
You sure you got enough help?
You should have stayed inside your truck, buddy.
My name's not Buddy.
Your name is Mud, asswipe.
Mark ducked the punch easily, but as he was coming back up into his fighter stance, another one of the punks kicked him in the leg. Another punk took a swing at him on the way down. Mark had his hands out in front of him as he hit the ground, but as soon as he was down, there were boots pounding his legs and back.
Son of a bitch.
Mark opened his eyes and saw that two of them were standing over him, while the other three had gone over to where Motherlode was parked. Each one of them had stones in their hands and were using them against the truck. One of them threw a stone against the driver's door. A rock shattered the left headlight. Mark could handle any amount of abuse to his body, but Motherlode, she was defenseless against these punks. Not only that, she'd been such a valiant road warrior over the years, she deserved more respect than that. Mark got to his feet and ran over to the closest punk and pulled him away from the truck, throwing him to the ground.
What's the matter, buddy? It's just a truck.
Just a truck? That's my livelihood. That's my life, my home. You low-life sack of shit!
Mark lunged forward, but before he could go anywhere, there were 2 sets of hands on him holding him back.
Or is it just a truck? I bet it hurts you more to see this thing broken than it does for you to get a kick in the nuts.
Mark stood still, showing no emotion. The man kicked in the remaining headlight.
I'm gonna kill you!
Mark tried to break free of the 2 punks holding him. He managed to get away from one, but the other hit him in the back of the head, knocking him to the ground.
I'll tell you what. We'll stop beating the crap out of your truck if you open it up and show us what's inside.
I've got money hidden away in the truck. There's plenty of it. And I'll get it for you if you don't hurt me or my truck anymore.
How much money?
I'm supposed to make this month's bank deposit in Timmins.
Get it.
Mark broke free of the 2 guys holding onto him and stumbled over toward Motherlode. He was able to move better than he'd thought, but he wasn't about to let on to these punks. Right now, he had the element of surprise, and he was intent on keeping it that way. Mark climbed up a step so that he could reach into the cab. But instead of reaching for his money, Mark dug behind his seat for the Louisville Slugger baseball bat he kept there for checking air pressure in his tires and for situations just like this one.
Here it is. I got it right here.
Let me see it.
Take it out from behind your back.
Here's your money, you ignorant bastard!
There was another one to his right. Mark changed his grip so that he could swing in the other direction with power. The two punks wanted no part of Mark and backed away, but the other two were standing up to him.
Come on, old man, we're gonna fuck you up!
But there was no way Mark was gonna let that happen. He decided to take on the bigger of the two first, cocking the bat over his right shoulder and moving in for a strike. But the thing was, the punk was looking for a big swing, so Mark kicked him instead, shattering the family jewels. The other one made a move toward Mark, and Mark swung his bat with just his right hand, since that was all his balance would allow. Mark recovered from the swing and set his feet with the bat once more cocked over his shoulder. At that moment, an OPP cruiser arrived on the scene. Because no cars had passed since the truck had gone by, it was obvious it had been a trucker who had called for help.
Put down the bat and get down on the ground!
But they were...
I said, put down the bat! Put it down now!
Mark put down the bat,